You're listening to The Science of CX, a podcast that hopes to inspire business owners and leaders to learn new techniques and turn prospects into customers and turn customers into raving fans. My name is Steve Pappas. I'm known for my relentless pursuit of all things customer. Across my career and also in my six startups, I've had to learn how to make decisions in business that customers really respond to. Let's spend some time together and help your business soar, grow, and accelerate. Well, welcome everybody to another episode of The Science of CX. I'm Steve Pappas, your host. And as always, we look everywhere to find the experts that can help you in your business journey, as well as your customer experience initiatives within your organization. Today is no exception. Today, we're going to be talking about some very interesting areas. We're going to cover a lot of material. Please take notes if you want, or you could actually come back and listen to it multiple times, because that makes it seem like we have more listeners. Hey, yeah, do that instead. Listen to this episode 3, 4, 5 times. That'll do it. Anyway, we're going to be talking about advanced telemarketing strategies. We're going to be talking about conflict management, interpersonal skills, customer support, rhetoric, gamification, employee motivation, and phonetic micro-expression reading. Have I piqued your interest yet? Well, we have a gentleman on today. His name is Richard Blank, and he comes to us from Costa Rica. And he is the head of a great business process outsourcing contact center. But he's also an expert in so many different areas that we want to talk about. So why don't we bring him in from the virtual green room? You know there's no real green room, of course, by now. But let's pretend he's coming in from the green room, and we'll welcome him to the show. Richard, thanks for joining us today on the show.
Steve, that's an amazing introduction. I'm so happy to be here. Really enjoy your work and cannot wait to share amazing ideas with your audience today.
That's great. Well, I'm going to give folks a little bit about your bio just so they understand where we're going to start from and maybe some interesting things about you too. So Richard's journey in the contact center space is filled with twists and turns. When he was 27 years old, he relocated to Costa Rica to train employees for one of the larger call centers in San Jose, Costa Rica, with a mix of motivational public speaking style backed by tactful and appropriate rhetoric. Richard shared his knowledge and trained over 10,000 bilingual telemarketers. I think he learned a few things along the way. Richard Blank has the largest collection of restored American pinball machines and antique Rockola jukeboxes in Central America, making gamification a strong part of Costa Rica contact center culture. Richard Blank is the chief executive officer for Costa Rica's call center since 2008. Richard also holds a bachelor's degree in communication and Spanish from the University of Arizona and a certificate of language proficiency from the University of Sevilla, Spain. A keynote speaker for Philadelphia's Abington High School 68th National Honor Society induction ceremony. Giving back to the high school is very important to Richard. As such, he endows a scholarship each year for students that plan on majoring in a world language at the university level. So I've got to start, Richard, with the first part here that just jumped right at me as the largest collection of restored American pinball machines and jukeboxes. Now, if anybody knows me, they know that I love pinball. Aside from playing guitar for the last 50 years, I love pinball. I don't quite go into the Galaga and those things that my wife loves, but I love playing pinball. So tell us, what have you got? I'd love to know what kind of pinball machines you have.
Steve, I'm so glad that you started with dessert first. And naturally, our favorite class in school was recess. So absolutely. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and the arcades were just some of the most amazing places to make friends and compete. It was so new, and the artwork on the cabinets and the marquees, it really was an experience. And always wanted that game room. Kind of like Ricky Schroeder and Silver Spoons. I was jealous, so I wanted one. And down here, since I own a call center and I have the space, I go treasure hunting. And one man's trash is another man's treasure. And they just really do not know what they have in their bodegas. And so I will find a machine and bring it back here. And with specialists, I restore them. Now, in regards to my pinball machines, the oldest one that I have is a 1976 Bally's Freedom. And one of the newer ones would be like, let's say, a Last Action Hero or a Doctor Who. I have an NBA Fast Break and a Mousing Around. I got a Williams Space Shuttle 1987. I got a Judge Dredd, Street Fighter II, Lethal Weapon 3, Jokers, World Cup, Hook, and Jurassic Park. So it turned out into a hobby, became an obsession. And when you're a married man, you decide which hills to die on and which swords to fall upon. And my wife and I have this agreement where pretty much everything is in her favor, but the one thing she knows that makes me happy are restoring these old classic jukeboxes and pinball machines, because what an era. And the craftsmanship and the fact that they've been preserved for decades shows that people really cared about these machines. Now, you and I, it was very expensive growing up, so it seemed like a luxury, but the fact that we can afford it, it really is something that I take full advantage of when I have the moments with just not my agents, but myself. There's always a pinball marathon going on down here.
Well, it's great that you have the employee engagement to do that. But I'll tell you, we had bought one. We had a Terminator pinball machine at one point that had the gun for the pinball release. But it took so much to get it into the basement of the home that we were living in. When we sold the house, we actually negotiated to sell the pinball machine so I didn't have to get it out of there. It was so heavy to move, and I wasn't about to. But I have been in the market for another one. Right now, the prices are through the roof on all those, too. I was looking for an Addams Family or another Terminator, but the Addams Family was the one that kind of thrilled me. And as well as jukeboxes. It's kind of funny. We have a lot of similar interests in collection. I don't have any jukeboxes. I wanted to cut my teeth on the first one. And I have a buddy in the UK that restores German jukeboxes. And he's one of the largest in the world that restores those early 70s and 80s jukeboxes that were built in Germany. I think it was like NCDM or something like that. And that's an interesting market. But let's get on to some of the other areas that we're going to talk about. I gave folks at the beginning of the episode a lot of terminology that we're going to be talking about today. And one of the things that I really wanted to discuss, this idea of phonetic micro-expressions. I don't know if our audience knows what that really is, or maybe some do. And of course, they'll yell at me in the comments, etc. But can we talk about these things? Because let's jump into some of these areas that we're going to get across. And are these all used? The things we're going to talk about, are they all used in the contact center? And can you train people in all of these areas?
They're definitely used in my call center. And really just depends on the sort of profiled agent that you have there. Let me take it back a bit. Everybody studies micro-expression reading. There was a TV show called Lie to Me that specialized in that, where you can judge people's postures, their eyes, their face, their hands. I mean, there's books and seminars about it. Now, when you're on the phone, three of your senses are removed, your taste, touch, and smell. And the scientists claim that when you do have one that is removed, your others expand. So I expect you to do much more active listening. And then people can also argue that you can't see people on the phone, but I beg to differ, because there is image streaming. You have metaphysics. When you read a book, it's better than the movie because of imagination. You can use more descriptions and more adjectives. But let's just concentrate on the sound of speech. In my opinion, the average attention span is about 30 seconds to 2 minutes. Conversations have introductions, bodies, and conclusions. So as long as you have a controlled environment, you can have a consistent variable, and then you can see inconsistencies. So now we have a base of how we're going to study speech in 30-second segments, okay? Your tone is what represents your emotion. And in my opinion, it should be confident and empathetic, because that should be consistent on your end. People will talk about a mirror imaging technique, Steve, and I agree with that. But you also need to know how you're speaking for your adjustment. So your mirror imaging isn't about you sitting across from someone and crossing your arms and tapping a finger. No, you don't have that over the phone. So eliminate any sort of mirror imaging face to face. I study the rate and the pitch. These are things that can be done in any language. I do not study semantics, the word choice. I'm studying the tone of your voice, which is mine, is consistent. I could care less what your tone is. That could be a flag or a mask. But you study someone's rate of speech and how loud they speak, their pitch. And every 30 seconds to 2 minutes, think about the XY chart that you had in pre-algebra. You can see how fast or how loud they're going. You consistently mark it every 30 seconds to 2 minutes. I would back it up with an answering speed, because that is something that you cannot control. It's more subconscious. You can definitely manipulate your tone, rate, and pitch. But the professional interrogators and police officers usually will throw the question in the fourth or fifth time to really judge the answering speed. So as long as you can do that XY chart with a horizontal line behind it and kind of gauge from 0 to 10 where you're going, you will see areas of spikes or dips. And in my opinion, that's a time to ask a tie down or a pin down question or a clarification question. And these are certain times in which you're able to assist the conversation in moving forward for better clarification. And it's not really giving away your power on that. You're really doing more of the Wu Wei, the less struggle, the rudder of the ship. And so this phonetic microexpression reading can be done. Just mind you this, in your first 30 seconds, I don't know you. And one is the loneliest number. In your second minute, we could have a match off, a one and a one, fast and high, low and slow. By five, at least you might have an odd man out in regards to your quadrants, because after you've gone all four quadrants, you have to repeat a quadrant. But most of the time, people are in quadrant one, the top and the fast. And so by your 10th 30 second to 2 minute, think about it like this. It's really about 4.5 to 5 minutes on something like that. And by your 11th, you should actually know how somebody is speaking. That's 5.5 minutes in on a 10-minute conversation. And by then, you will definitely know how to close the deal. And so once you see it, you can't unsee it. After 3 weeks, it becomes habit. And once you start paying attention to it, it becomes very lucid and clear. You are not lying, and I'm not manipulating, but these people are obviously giving away certain tell signs on how they speak on first time or even long-term conversations. And if you do catch somebody being facetious or not as clear, maybe ask them to repeat it using other senses or using another example to see if they're consistent. And so I think it's an excellent way not to be offensive, because passive aggressively, you could once again use a Me Too technique with somebody. Let's just say hypothetically, you can't hear them. It's a bad connection on a cell phone or a dog is barking in the background. I try to fall on that small sword. Instead of placing blame on them, it's for my clarification, Steve, did you say 1, 2, 3 or ABC? Because the worst thing you could ever do is have somebody so upset and go down rabbit holes, because now you need to restart your phonetic microexpression reading. The tarot card reader said you could read 2 different reads in 10 minutes, depending if it's sunny or rainy. Same person, same hour, but it could be a different read. So the greatest thing you could do is to ride that wave and keep it at that apex as long as you can. It's almost like when people said lucid dreaming, you really don't want to readjust your body to be able to keep that consistent breathing and body posture. In my opinion, with someone that you're speaking with, you try to keep them as consistent as possible. There's a little wiggle room there, but don't go extreme. And if you can handle something like that, fall on these swords, get clarification, I think your audience would have some extremely effective conversations with people on a first time.
This is a very interesting area, because we do have an awful lot of folks that either work in contact centers or are managing contact centers or even outsource to contact centers. And the training of agents tends to be very similar in most organizations, but they're not thinking about how they can better control. They're usually using the approach where, gee, I'm sorry you're having that problem. So they're falling on the sword most of the time. But if you think about the calls, right? If you think about the types of calls that come in, I mean, they're not picking up the phone because they're just calling to say thank you, or they're calling to say, gee, what a great product this is. They're usually picking up the phone, or they're making a contact with them because there's an issue. There's some type of an issue. Either they don't understand, they don't know how to fill out, they don't know how to do something, or there's a more negative issue. So if you think about the incoming approach that happens, a lot of it tends to be negative. And unfortunately, the contact center agents these days are probably feeling more and more of society's negativity coming out of the pandemic, you know, because people were very understanding or more understanding during the pandemic, but it seems lately they're taking it out on frontline people. So I don't know how you guys have seen things, but from the folks that I've spoken to in the last few months, it seems like most of the calls are major issues and they have to diffuse right away. So can they use the phonetic microexpression method that you talk about to kind of even the playing field and get them to calm down so that they can explain what their issue is better rather than they're ready to blow up at any moment type of thing?
Sure. And I'm glad that you brought that up. That's a subject that I can easily address and apply the phonetic microexpression read because mind you, my friend, you could start the call yelling and cursing and at the end, thanking them. So naturally, your phonetic microexpression reading might be adjusted with rate and pitch. But I would never say that I'm sorry unless you specifically spilled the drink or broke the window, because then you might get offended because this individual speaking with you is so nice. They didn't do it, but they're apologizing for someone else's broken window. So my suggestion for my agents immediately is to thank you, Steve, for sharing that with me. I understand your position. Didn't mean that I agree with it, but I understand your position. And allow me a moment to make it work and fix it for you. And so now the audience, your client, coming in guns a-blazing, isn't really putting all that anger at the individual because that individual did not make that problem. They're taking the shrapnels. You say the incoming, that's a great way to use it, incoming, a bomb, a grenade. But I like to diffuse. There's a technique that I use called the buffer boomerang technique. And so if somebody comes at me with a negative tone, I will like sponge and buffer that negative tone. I will name drop you and say, Steve, that's an excellent question. Repeat back your question, what it was, to show active listening. So there's a connected key lock there. And then boomerang it back as a plus three. So I could potentially, my friend, readjust the tone and the pace of the call to then put it back into that phonetic microexpression reading that you need to really nail it. But I believe that people are frustrated. And mind you this, there's a lot more omni-channel non-voice support. So prior to that phone call, they might have filled out a couple forms, sent a couple emails. That only elevates the stress. So when they're calling, they're almost letting off steam. And if you allow them to speak, you'd be surprised how it goes from a 10 to a 2. Both in pitch and the rate. They cry it out. And then everyone calms down. You've taken copious notes. Now, Steve, you mentioned A, B, C, and D. What about E, Richard? Thank you, Steve. And also E. There's nothing wrong with raking and reviewing and meeting minutes. I can't just solve it with you with a magic potion. These things, someone is coming to you emotional. They don't know you. You might need to repeat your name multiple times in third person because now they're embarrassed 3 minutes in to ask your name, Steve. So you could say, okay, at the end of this call, Richard, you're going to say, Steve, you really helped me out in this section. You know, oh, thank you, Steve. Great. I got him. I anchored. And so these are certain soft skills to just be polite, show your manners, take that certain control of a conversation, more of a shepherd with its sheep. They zigzag, but they still go back in the barn. So I don't need so many jagged edges. There's no straight lines in nature. And I love empathy with somebody because when I use your name, I will usually use it in a transitional sentence or a confirmation. And then during the conversation, I will use personal pronouns as, you know, the yours and the ours, just to make sure that I'm keeping your conversation going and your attention and then landing in the bomb when I drop the name drop. And you should take these calls every 30 seconds to 2 minutes, because as you say, they could change. But this gives you an excellent chance, my friend, if you really want to look at it logically, that if somebody's calling in, you have a chance to retain the client. You have the chance to upsell them if that's what you're doing. You could get a referral out of it. But look at it like this. Let's say we drop the ball. Worst case scenario, this individual will take the time to do an exit interview and tell us areas in which we could have improved, or what our competition had done in order to earn their business. And as long as you're willing to keep an open mind, and I don't like the word constructive criticism, I mean, you fumbled the ball, you should have known what you were doing, then just call the balls and the strikes and let you know that you made this error and learn from it and don't do it again. And these are the sort of things, call by call, person by person. Instead of doing 100 calls a day, Steve, why don't you have your agents take maybe 95? So they take an extra couple, 3 minutes on the phone to let Mr. Jones relax a little bit. That is the secret to the successor, old school style.
This is really interesting because as you're explaining some of these tips and techniques, it occurs that it doesn't just apply in the contact center world. I mean, this could be if you're a brick and mortar store, it could be you're a pizza place. There could be people calling because, hey, you got the wrong toppings on my pizza. The delivery was wrong. Or there could be all kinds of things, but it applies pretty much to all areas of business. And people running small businesses could learn from these same techniques. Don't you agree?
See, this could save a Thanksgiving dinner, maybe a marriage. These are just diplomatic soft skills of attentive listening and prioritizing. But I couldn't agree with you more. And I never even shared with you my favorite technique. It's the positive escalation. When I call a place and people always give the gatekeeper a bad rap, but these are the individuals that the CEO and the owners love the most. And they're the first impression and the strongest warrior of the tribe. They're the first one there, representing them in the best light. And so for me, I like to understand their protocol. I like to properly introduce myself and say the name of their company and ask how their company is doing, sometimes better than they do, just to at least give them a taste of how I speak, instead of just immediately asking to speak to you, Steve. And then if this individual decides to transfer me, the first thing I'm going to let them know prior to the transfer is that they did a great job. And I will be mentioning that verbally to the owner of the company. And at the conclusion of the call with the owner of the company, I will also mention that in writing. So if I happen to call your company back, the Richard circle's complete because this individual remembers me. And I've heard dozens and dozens of times a thank you and saying, I've been here for a decade and you're the first person that wrote about me to Mr. Jones. And these are individuals that will tell you anniversaries and promotions or no, Steve's direct extensions 125. Call him on Thursdays at 2. Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate it. And I love them to death. Those are the greatest insiders. It's a plethora of information. And the moment that you start bullying your way in there or pretending they're waiting for your call or you're insistent, that's why they're there to hang up on you. But there's a certain way to be not clever, but you have 30 seconds to make a first impression. Half of that is your speech, her speech, and give a couple seconds of silence. So you really got about 12 seconds to speak. That's not a lot. My suggestion is to say things that they're most familiar with, which is the name of their company and their own name. And then you got to do your own name as well, because you can't be anonymous the whole call. That's kind of shady. You can use a little bit of that in the beginning by just doing a name spike and a proper introduction. And if you get the pass to pitch, you have the momentum, and then you do, once again, that sort of escalation. It seems to work for me because it separates you from hundreds, if not thousands, of people that are prospecting that business.
Interesting. Back to the contact center for a second. You talked about have your agents take 95 calls instead of 100, but most of the contact centers that I've dealt with over the past 20 plus years, they're driven by their average handle time. They're driven by the numbers. To some degree, they're even told when they're going to the bathroom. How do you resolve that to a contact center manager that is just driving everything by the numbers?
So you're an intake coordinator for a law firm for lawsuits against firings or disabilities, and somebody calls in and they happen to become emotional for a minute. What are you going to do, Steve? Look at the clock and say, Mrs. Jones, please hurry up. I only have 2 more minutes to talk to you. You know what would happen? It wouldn't be for the client or for me. The agent might actually resign on something like that. So as much as we want to stick to certain metrics, you're talking about an artist of speech, somebody that is in the moment, that's in the now, that wants to assist this individual the best way that they can. And by limiting their ability to build that sort of rapport or to allow someone to get it out, which could be the key to closing the deal or to upsell for something or to get that referral, I don't do things like that. Now, we're not doing extreme where someone's doing 50 calls a day instead of 100, but you could see there's an average, but that's what it's called, an average. And if you say you just want to look at conversion ratios, look at that too. But each individual, once again, is an artist and they have their own special sauce. And some people are great at intros, others bodies, others conclusions. But my goodness gracious, if somebody is in the moment and they're connecting with someone and they're standing up instead of sitting down, and you could tell they have the glaze where they're not staring at anyone, they're just thinking of the client and everyone can see them doing this. You don't think that that energy spreads on the floor. You don't think that that's important as well? That's sort of synergy. So these rigid centers that judge you on your bathroom breaks and your handling time, you're going to break the agent. I mean, you can do that and grind it out, but you might have an attrition rate. But as long as I give somebody the ability to expand on a call and to be themselves, my friend, so they're not just plastic and going through the motions, then I can create an ace. I can create a leader. I can create someone that will come to me at the conclusion of the call and say, you know, Mrs. Jones started crying. I go, she all right? She goes, yeah. It took a couple more minutes, but I connected her through to the counselor and I gave additional notes because we had to speak about her husband just passing away and the fact that she has to move and other things that would have never been qualifying the call because you're supposed to be asking her just certain questions. But no, this individual added additional things. And then they say, thank you for listening. You're the different company than the ones before that just put me through the assembly line. And you know that. It's the mom and pop. It's the bed and breakfast. You'd rather go to the small hardware store sometimes because you know the man. I'll drive an extra couple miles to my favorite restaurant. Steve, that's the sort of the science that you're talking about. It's very simple. It's how you feel and how you were treated. What about the price? What about the price? Sometimes it's worth the money. It's not always about saving a dollar. It's maybe about supporting your business. Or if I'm having a day with some blues, you come over to me and just let me know you're happy that I'm there and you sit with me for a second. So as we get older, my friend, those are the sort of relationships that we see at businesses. And you and I understand that, the grind. And we also understand when your favorite client walks through the door. So I like to pay that forward the best that I can.
Absolutely. So I went down that path and I think your answer and your philosophy is brilliant. Unfortunately, I mean, it's the way I believe too, that the contact center folks in an organization should be revered because they are your front line. They hold things together. They are the impetus for the referral, the upsell, the further sell, the expansion, all of those things. Yet still in today's world, CEOs don't always think that way. They look at a contact center as a cost center rather than the proper way of looking at it as it's an expansion center. It's a focus group. It's the lifeblood of the company because those folks have the most contact with our customers post-sale. They become the hub of the post-sale journey. And unfortunately, maybe it'll take another generation before enough C-level folks understand that. So that brings me more to the conversation of culture. How do we develop a culture in our contact centers, especially, and I know this can spill out into the rest of the business, but how can we develop a culture that rewards and reveres the contact center agents as being the customer success vehicle? The people that help our customers become more successful using our products and our services.
You have to look at it two ways. If you yourself are not centered in balance, it would be very difficult to expand and to think of others. I can't hit the ball and drag Johnny. As much as my agents here have become bilingual, which shows structure and dedication over years outside the classroom, I expect them to do the same thing if they're thinking about being a telemarketer as a profession. Besides the 8 hours that they put in here, they should be doing dedicated practice outside of the center, reading in English, watching certain movies or speeches, so they can take certain parts of rhetoric that inspired them, that they saw transitional sentences were effective. You could do case studies in history and find out certain speeches that moved people. And then secondly, I mentioned the word synergy. These individuals were a very social environment. If you and I are working out at the gym, Steve, we're going to be pumping each other up to put up three or four more on the bar, put more plates up. So I expect the audience, the agents, to feed off of their energy and to share ideas and to pick someone up when they're feeling down. As I mentioned, I created a gamification culture. So I have a place where people can let off steam, recharge batteries, hang out with me and meet people from other departments. So that assists me in one way. But also, since once again, English is their second language, the fact that they are getting a return on investment, I see that these agents are much more focused for intense periods of time because of the translation. So it's less area for distraction. But here's the best part, my man, in regards to my culture. When I first came down here at 27 years old, I didn't start C-level at my friend's call center. I taught English, decided to stay, and then worked at the center. And so I was with the proletariat for 4 years. I went through so many departments. I saw the good and the bad. And what it did for me was it enabled me to see areas to enhance it for the agent and for the client, to give them their dignity so they don't feel like robots or expendable. And when I had the opportunity to start this business, they couldn't fool me because I was on the phone. I've done this before. And I hate to say it, I'm not bragging, but I am the sensei of my dojo. In this industry where people burn out and they look down upon it, I thrived and really excelled. But I saw the art in it. Look at it like this. You're very selective of the campaigns that come in here. We're in a strict Catholic country. They have to go home and tell their parents what they do. If I brought in something gray area or shady, no one would take it. So I'd have no friends at my Chuck E. Cheese birthday party. And so you have to do an account to not only where the client feels okay offering it, but the agent would feel comfortable making the calls. Because if it's a forced fit, if it's out of place and out of character, they're not going to last long. They're not going to sound natural. And we're not giving anything real specific here. But as I say, I have to ensure that what I'm bringing into this call center is something where I'm able to fulfill the needs. Now, I can add scripts and suggestions, but initially, it has to be something that just does not compromise any sort of ethics.
Interesting. Well, let's cover a little bit more because I'm fascinated by not only the culture, but the organization that you've built to help organizations that want to outsource their contact center. So maybe we could talk a little bit about your training, your coaching, your mentoring methods. And then what does the knowledge base look like for your agents to always do a better job? Because quite frankly, I mean, you're going to do as good or better a job than the company you're representing, because you are going to keep the account and you're going to keep them happy and keep them over the course of a lifetime. So how do you train differently? How do you coach and mentor folks and keep them so that you don't have the attrition level that a lot of places have today?
That's a wonderful question. Real fast in regards to attrition, I have more of a natural attrition than a forced attrition because companies such as Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle and Sykes are here. So I'll lose somebody for a scheduling conflict for the university, a boyfriend or girlfriend works there closer to their home. Very rarely, if not never, someone will say that I insulted them, yelled at them, gave them the walk of shame. It's just maybe an ex-employee with some sour grapes. I treat everybody with dignity and I look for ways to delegate and promote them. But initially, it's really the psychology prior to any sort of skill set. So fear is a morbid anticipation of things that haven't happened yet. The fact that they learned a second language is 10 times harder than any campaign I'll put them on. I also believe in the right bus, right seat philosophy. And so when they come into the call center, besides starting their day playing pinball to make friends and relax a little bit, we really do focus on quality assurance. So we can grade their calls for certain metrics, but I try to do certain breakthroughs. Like when they're filling out their resumes with me and putting in all of their credentials, I'll ask them to turn the page over, Steve, and give me a couple paragraphs of a coming of age moment. Let me know when you beat up a bully or saved a kitten from a tree. And so I could use this when they're having a rainy Wednesday to remind them of when they were a champion. These are things they always have in them. It's just a matter of getting it out and keeping it consistent. And so let's just say in the first day of class, it's very important not just to lecture them when they just nod at you and walk out the door. You need to have checkpoints. You need to have interaction. You can go over a certain segment and then just maybe have somebody stand up in front of class and read the next paragraph. Why? Because you're triple gunning. They're reading out loud, they're public speaking, they're doing it in front of the boss. Imagine those sort of butterflies you would have. But if you could triple or quadruple your training on a daily basis, where then you go upstairs, you record yourself reading the script, where you're practicing it, you're not just reading it, you're speaking into a recording device, then you're listening to it, and then you're doing a self-analysis for self-adjustments over the things we spoke about. You'll know when your pausing is off, or when you're too loud or too fast, or you stuttered or mispronounced a word. And I'm allowing you, Steve, to write it out phonetically, at least learn how to spell it. But the vowels are sometimes tricky for Latino. So it's okay to be able to switch things around so it's pronounced a certain way. And these are the sort of adjustments, minor adjustments, that we make in order for somebody to feel more comfortable initially so they don't pick up bad habits. And kind of like bedside manner, I can't stress enough the name drops and the active listening and the confirmations, because people feel much more comfortable when they're being listened to and you are taking your meeting minutes. And if we need to repeat something in the military alphabet, A, it shows that you're extremely involved and engaged in the conversation. A lot of the times people served in the military, so they think that's pretty cool. And you're not just making up words and going along. These people know that you are actively trying to spell their name, their email address correctly. And so I've seen the tens of thousands of phone calls that's the most effective way, if not to offend somebody, when you can't hear them well, or they have an exotic name, or if it's something where you just say, yeah, okay. But the next thing you know, your email bounces back. It would have been better off to confirm if it's L for Lima, you know, and just to make sure that you got it. And as I say, these are the sort of things, like in school, you come to class, you do your homework and you do your quizzes. You could still not do so well on the final exam, but you're going to pass the class. You will be preparing yourself and marinating and softening up the call and the relationship in order to convert it. And sometimes, my friends, it happens a second or a third time. Don't expect a cold call close. I tell my clients to put their checkbook away. A lot of the times I just want to answer their questions and show credentials and reintroduce them to other people on the floor that they can meet and make a better decision. So don't feel rushed. People will see that and they will be apprehensive to move forward with you. So let it happen at a natural pace.
So you said something about you QC all the calls. And I think I remember you were talking about your Hall of Fame, you know, the best and the worst calls. I mean, is that used as a training method for everyone to understand both the good and the bad types of calls?
Absolutely. Remember, you were mentioning earlier about people calling in the first round of calls coming in where people are upset. If they can ride that wave, they see the bark is, there's no bite, it's just barking. And that we calmed Mrs. Jones down, we listened to Mrs. Jones, we separated piles, we were able to move forward. The call didn't take that long because we didn't have to repeat things because we were confirming things. We eliminated rabbit holes. We did the mirror imaging. We did the phonetics. We did the drops. It's beautiful. Now, you have this toolbox. It's not A to Z. There are steps that can be skipped or moved back to. How about we look at it like this? I loved romantic tragedies, so I consider that a hang-up call is a romantic death. Where am I going with this? Let's just say you are just hardcore carpet bombing, making outbound calls. And no matter what you say, you're calling a place that just says, don't call again, or not interested, or we're good, thanks, and hang up. I always look at it like this. If you can do a company name spike and do a name drop of the individual before they hang up on you, I think that's a beautiful death. I think at least poor Lomenos, you got something out of that call. But then they wouldn't be surprised that you could anchor yourself by just getting them out of that trance by saying their name in that first 30 seconds. I've had times where we bought another minute, bought another 3 minutes. And just by default, nothing on our own, we couldn't move forward. I'll give you an example. People can call me and we could be on the phone and 99% were ready to sign the contract. But then they ask if we do Chinese. I don't have Chinese agents. I don't do graveyard shift and I can't match offshore prices in India and the Philippines. So just by that alone, I'm not able to move forward. But 99% fit. So how do I feel about that? Well, I'm a little disappointed. But then again, I was able to go 15 rounds, lost on a decision, but I was still able to make my points, listen to their points, build rapport, have some laughs, introduce, fantasize. Good call.
So another couple of questions. What type of companies or what type of industries do you guys mostly handle calls for, inbound or outbound?
Well, I'll let you know five we don't do. We don't do sports books, casinos, stocks, pharmacies, or sweepstakes. I have nothing against it, just don't want to do it. But I'm looking for small to medium-sized companies in the United States, Canada, Central America, and Europe that would need individuals to make outbound lead generation appointment setting or inbound customer support. And it's very simple. Our agents are college educated. They're dedicated. I don't have a blended or a mixed center. They only work for your campaign. And they have some amazing skill sets here. Costa Rica really packs a punch in regards to business process outsourcing. I had mentioned some of the big boys, but there are tons of call centers here. And since we're the only democratic society in Central America, they don't have a standing army. So there's a 95% literacy rate, Steve. So as much as people might see telemarketing and call centers as transitional sort of jobs or something in the United States, as you say, has a certain rap, here it pays more than most vocations. So I am having some extremely educated bilingual people with degrees walking in this door and working with me. So it's pretty amazing the sort of people that you meet here. Very eclectic, all different types.
That's great. So if a company calls you up and says, okay, we want to get started, what is that initial onboarding look like, time-wise especially, and system-wise? And how quickly can you be up and running to take their calls?
Great. Well, let's just say I accept the vertical and I'm comfortable with it. There's a pre-launch checklist that my floor manager and chief technical officer send to that company. It's very difficult for me to start moving forward without stations being set up, connections made, scripts, rebuttals, reporting, and contact. Because once the ads go out and people come in, it's really a seller's market. I got to be able to explain it to their candidates, A, the campaign that they're doing, the incentives that they have, and the metrics that they're expecting. It just can't be fantasy time. It needs to be something that's concrete. And so once we bring the people in, it really all depends on the training time. I've had people go as low as a half a day just to teach a CRM and do a little bit of role play for fun. And others do longer training sessions, even up to a month. That concerns me because we do follow all Costa Rican labor laws. And there are certain call centers that are known for, like for an example, Sykes has the MetLife account. And supposedly people will be there for an entire month training. And then on their first day of coming back to work, they just don't show up. And by Costa Rican labor law, they need to get paid for that month. Naturally, they go on a certain list as being a jumper and it's not fair, but that's the name of the game. So the longer the training, the more I'm concerned because people sometimes can take advantage of that and just use that as a placeholder until they can find another job. So as long as we have certain very specific checkpoints to ensure that this agent really has done their due diligence, really engaged, really up to speed, that's a good risk compared to just doing 5 days worth of classroom talking about merchant process outsourcing or stuff like that. It needs to be very specific. And I have to ensure that this client that I'm speaking with does have a track record. If it's a brand new pilot project, then we need to invest in the process and there shouldn't be any surprises. And I have to let them know what to expect when building a campaign. There may be attrition. We may need to readjust the script or call certain area codes or do certain things. But I guess the most important thing about it is being forthright. When it comes to onboarding people, I can easily have somebody in 5 business days, depending. If you need 10 people, give me up to 10 business days. You know, and maybe we can hire people piecemeal. We can catch them when certain campaigns at other centers end. As I mentioned, it's very competitive out there. The more that you put out the start date, the more that you're going to lose people because they need a job between those times. And now since COVID came, it really adjusted to the work from home. So there is an advantage of the brick and mortar because of internet redundancy, my generator and on-site IT support. But Steve, I was exceptionally fortunate during COVID to be able to adjust my business model virtually. Because if I owned a brick and mortar only, like a bike shop or a pizza parlor, I'm in big trouble. As much as I lost a lot of the essence of the center and the camaraderie, I was able to survive. But, you know, the labor pool's changed. I have to ensure if there is training, they should be on site to know the company culture and to at least meet us before going home. It's one of those things, my friend, where I really did see a huge shift. when I first started this back in 2000.
That's great. Well, in the last few minutes that we've got, you know, I'd ask you whether or not we could give our listeners an exercise. We talked about the two paragraph coming of age. Can you explain an exercise that folks can do as homework after they listen to this episode and that might be interesting for them to learn more about the content that we gave them here today? And then when we come back, maybe you can give folks a way of getting in touch with you guys if that's something that they're looking for.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Let people do the triple watch. They should watch something without sound. They should watch something without sight. And if you want to study the visual body language, that's great. Just watch something without sound. You can assume what they're doing. And then if you want to study the phonetics, my opinion is to choose a channel that you don't understand the language. Like for me, it would have to be maybe Chinese or German or something like that. Italian, French, and Portuguese are too similar to Spanish for me. But if I watch the Chinese channel, it's very easy for me to do that phonetic micro-expression reading because I don't understand any semantics. So even I'm taking out the tone, I'm just studying their rate and their pitch, and I could study it that way. While you're on the phone, once again, these are things that you can do. You just draw your XY chart, the horizontal line, and every 30 seconds to 2 minutes, point to how Mr. Jones is speaking just for practice. But it is about practice. It's about dedicated practice. Record yourself. Listen to yourself. I don't like how I sound. That's what everybody says. But guess what, Steve? That's what you got. So you need to adjust it. And as you and I have a mirror and our beards look great, because we do look great, you could do the same thing with your voice as well. Record it, master it, adjust it. And if you do that, you'll see that you'll get more positive reinforcement from people. They'll be more, I guess, inclined to ask you for advice because you were sympathetic about it and the way you spoke about it. And finally, if you are in a certain situation where there's emotion and it's tense, you should choose to speak last. And if it's not something where you need to immediately give an answer, then you should sleep on it so you can decompress and maybe come back the next day a little more level-headed and prioritize. And that's an excellent way to grow and to crack some codes and to get to different levels. You don't always need to prove your point at that moment. There's other ways to do it so you don't overreact, overextend, and say something you regret. So it's not like you're being weak. No, you're being considerate of it and you're being tactful about it. If you're in the moment, and it's face-to-face with somebody, if you have to, even though it looks funny, you should close your eyes when speaking so there's less distraction and you're not energy being sucked from you. They might say, why are you closing your eyes? I'm allowed. There's no rules to this. It's not tag. You're asking me something emotional, so allow me my focus and my balance. And if somebody is being aggressive with you, I think you should look in between their eyes. It looks like you're looking in their eyes. So it's not like you're looking away or allowing them to suck the energy out of you like Medusa. But it is a certain technique, sir, where instead of losing your direction and your energy and your breathing, you can regroup yourself. And these are the sort of conflict management skills that have assisted me in having more productive conversations when they could have really gotten out of hand.
That's great. I mean, this has been filled with great techniques, tips, and insight as well. Thank you for being so generous with your expertise. This has really been a wonderful episode. Richard, how can people get in touch with you if they're thinking about outsourcing, if they're thinking about needing a contact center? Because I think by the end of this, they understand what you bring to the table. So how can they get in touch with you?
I really appreciate having me on the show today with you and your audience and allowing me to share this information. First thing they should do, my friend, is buy a first-class plane ticket and come down here to Costa Rica so you can enjoy some ecotourism and go to some beaches and waterfalls. But your audience can give me a call at 888-271-6750 or send me an email at ceo@costaricascallcenter.com. And finally, I have a very large Facebook fan page of about 98,000 local Costa Rican Ticos. And they can't wait to meet you, Steve. You're going to have tens of thousands of new fans in Central America.
I can't wait. Well, Richard, thanks again for joining us today. I really love the thing that you said earlier, and I'm going to add something to it. So each agent is a voice artist. And this is a message to all the CEOs out there that have contact centers and folks that have agents working for them, that each agent is a voice artist. And I think you should let them create a great interaction. So let them create. let them build those great interactions. So that's it for our episode of The Science of CX. I'm Steve Pappas, your host. We've had Richard Blank on today from Costa Rica Call Center. And I want to thank you all for joining us. If you like the content that we bring to you, please feel free to drop us a review wherever you get your podcasts. And until we meet again, please stay safe, stay healthy, and do take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Science of CX. My name is Steve Pappas. I really hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you have, the highest compliment that you can give us is to subscribe, rate, and review The Science of CX. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next episode. Finding one place to see all customer experience related tools and technology has been difficult until now. We just built it. Get ready for a Science of CX original. Customer experience technology has been helping to drive businesses by giving them insights into better methods to engage and delight their customers for some time now. But if you're looking for CX tech, you have to search far and wide to understand the whole landscape. CX Stash is your simple one-stop directory of all the great CX-related technology you need. It breaks down all CX by collections like analytics, CRM, journey mapping, voice of the customer, UX, customer support, and more. It's free to create an account and use. No advertising cluttering up your experience. Just one place to find all the great CX tech. Sign up today at www.cxstash.com.